If you have loved ones that rely on your income, you need life insurance. But finding the best quote shouldn't take a lifetime. With Policy Genius, you could save 50% or more by comparing quotes from America's top insurers. First, head to policygenius.com. In minutes, Policy Genius will compare prices starting at as little as $1 a day. You might even be eligible to fast-track your coverage with a no-exam policy. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the paperwork and red tape. If you have any questions, their team of licensed, independent experts is on hand to help. In fact, Policy Genius's award-winning service has a 5-star rating across thousands of reviews on Trustpilot and Google. Make today the day you cross life insurance off your list and get protection for your loved ones. You could save 50% or more by comparing quotes. To get covered, head to policygenius.com today.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're starting the first of 3 episodes with Jason. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing really well, Ken. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure here. We're going to talk the next 3 nights about the matchups against the AFC North teams. Now, with what we know about the schedule in May, we couldn't help, but it's June the 4th as we speak right now, and we're looking forward to the regular season, of course, still 3 months away. But we thought this is a great time to start talking about potential matchups here. We'll get another chance, I'm sure, as the seasons get closer and Know Your Foe episodes and whatnot. But we're going to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals tonight and how they match up against the Ravens, some of the things we think the Ravens have to do offensively and defensively to try and win those matchups. So, Jason, why don't you take it away? We're going to start on the offensive side for the Bengals. Talk about what they have in terms of resources. Just pick one thing, I guess, and then I'll do one. And we'll talk about how that matchup might play out.
Sure. Well, I think that we'll both be around the same topic because the Bengals chose Ja'Marr Chase instead of addressing their offensive line. Excuse me. So they're bringing back basically the same group that they had last year. They added Jackson Carmen in the draft. They still have Jonah Williams at left tackle, Michael Jordan, Trey Hopkins, their center. And they had a lot of trouble addressing the Ravens' pressure when Burrow was in the game. The Ravens sacked them 7 times. So that group is pretty much back intact. They did add Riley Reiff at right tackle, which should help bring some veteran stability to that position. But that's another area where the Ravens are going to look to exploit again this year.
Yeah, I think that we could certainly talk for quite a long time on this particular topic. I think they did some positive things to address their line. In a lot of ways, I'm jealous of their draft, in a sense. They got the developmental tackle they needed in Deontay Smith, the East Carolina product, who was highly touted on people's board, but mostly he's a length guy who certainly is a little raw, but he's coming into a good situation where he's the Bengals' 3rd tackle. Jonah Williams is going to be on the left side and Riley Reiff on the right side, and that'll give the Bengals, I think, a pretty solid start at tackle for the future. It's honestly pretty strong relative to a lot of other teams in the league. The Ravens obviously have an older guy at right tackle in Villanueva, and honestly a lot of ways a backup left tackle, but the guy who they want as their starter long-term for the Ravens, I don't think is on the team yet.
Well, I think it's a big year for Jonah Williams, actually. A heck of a football player, but doesn't physically fit the left tackle prototypical length and everything else. And he kind of did an Orlando Brown when he came out of the draft, if I remember, I'm a left tackle. And really, if they had him at guard, left guard, if he was working there, they could have a plus-plus player there. So this is going to be a really big year, I think, for Jonah Williams. And that's part of the reason I think that it's a big thing for them to have Riley Reiff on the right side, because it gives Burrow one less thing that he has to worry about. They have enough to worry about with the same offensive coordinator, the same center in Trey Hopkins, and the Ravens loading the A-gap. They're really going to have to get that pressure right if they're going to take advantage of their receivers.
Yeah, they picked on that, well, really both A-gaps, but the left A-gap in particular last year in the game, not just withstanding simulated pressure, which is plenty useful, where they just, the line was not cohesive enough, in my opinion, to know who they were supposed to block, particularly in that first game. But they also stunted relentlessly into that gap. And that was part of that big effort in the first, what, six or seven sacks they had in the first Cincinnati game.
Yeah, I have seven sacks. And Burrow won the day 19-30, 183 yards, only 6.1 yards attempt. So he really struggled. I think a lot of those went to Mixon. Actually had six receptions for 35 yards in that game. Mm-hmm. So it was dump off city. It was check down city for Burrow. He really had no chance. And that's something that he's going to have to, I believe he's going to have to take care of, getting his line and knowing what's going on, getting everybody lined up. But that's really going to be a key to the Ravens and Bengals game, because if they don't get that fixed, it's going to be a long day for them.
Right. It's the major point. The big player that I think addresses their need more, and he was my number two guard in this entire draft, which means I had him ahead of Ben Cleveland, is Jaxon Carmen, who will play either left guard or right guard for this team. I'm not sure exactly where he'll play. A tackle, like most linemen who end up in the NFL, they were a tackle in college and they end up playing somewhere else. But this year had a lot, as we know, of shorter armed offensive tackles who really don't have a likely future in the NFL there. Brady Christensen, one of the really good ones at BYU, they've already pegged as a center, so they decided he's going elsewhere. And there's others like Liam Eikenberg and Carmen and a handful of others that probably end up at guard in their careers. But Carmen is a pretty damn good one. And earth mover, got reasonable mobility that is not a big shortcoming. At least I don't think it's enough of a shortcoming at guard. He should be a pretty good one. When the Bengals got him, it was a little bit of a twinge of pain to me.
He was a favorite of mine too. I liked him and actually Kendrick Green, who went to the Steelers. So I got double chopped on that one. But yeah, I mean, we'll see how quickly he's able to get into the lineup. I think he's a left guard. I think you agree with that just because of his mobility. And it'll be interesting to see if he's ready to go week one. We don't play the Bengals till week seven, so maybe he enters the lineup at that time. So he might be a player that we see, but overall, it starts and ends with the offensive line. The weapons the Bengals have are nice, but they're really going to have to fix the pressure issues.
Yeah, the Bengals are still paying the price right now. That's actually a play on words there that I did not intend. For the 2018 number one pick,
Billy.
At 21st, Billy Price. There you go. And so he's in his fourth year now. There's no way they picked up his fifth year option. I didn't check, but if they did, they're fools. He started only one season so far out of his three, and he really has been an enormous disappointment. In a lot of ways, he's one of those players that continues to remind you that even though the guy's the best center prospect in the draft, it doesn't mean he's one of the top 32 players. And it certainly doesn't mean you draft him in the first round, just because his center is a position that other linemen can gravitate to when they fail due to length issues at guard, for example. It's not the position you try and fill first. It's like drafting your designated hitter with your first round draft pick in baseball. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I didn't think of that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can move to center. Guards move to center all the time. I mean, we might see it on our team with Bredesen. He's probably his
with
best. And Bredesen,
or
too.
Or Bredesen, yeah.
Right, Bredesen, too. I mean, he's so short that if he's going to make the team, he might need to be capable of snapping a ball. So, but yeah, to your point, I guess it's nowhere to go but up when it comes to the Bengals' offensive line. So, I'm not as impressed as say you were with their draft, because I don't think it's going to make a difference as far as playing the Ravens, say a good front like the Ravens. I love Deontay Smith though. That was the guy that I was studying when I saw Brandon Stevens for the first time. And I really liked his physical makeup. I think he's going to be a good player in another year or two.
Now let's. I guess we'll go on to mine now. If we're done with the offensive line, even though I think it's a good group that you could certainly discuss a lot further. The interesting pick, and this will be a big change in Cincinnati. AJ Green, apparently done with the Bengals. You know, I don't believe he's been signed anywhere at present. So I guess it's possible he could still come back. But given what he looked like on the bench and more importantly on the field this last season, I don't know why the Bengals would want him back. And they go out and they get Jamar Chase with their first round draft pick number 6 overall, right?
I think it was five. It was number five. Okay. Yes.
So Chase is a guy who adds to a very deep and talented receiving core that'll now have Tyler Boyd, I assume, in the slot where he's dangerous as hell. T. Higgins, a player I really coveted for the Ravens 2 years ago. And now Jamar Chase, who's, the number one receiver out of this draft. So exciting group of players, certainly they have. And one of the keys for the Ravens is going to be how they take away those options early for Burrow. Burrow is a very deadly mid-range passer. And these guys could create a lot of easy pitch and catch opportunities for him, whether that's mid-range or whether some shots get taken deep.
They're going to get somebody this year. This is a team that's on the up and coming because of that. And I don't think the Ravens are the best matchup for them because of the secondary depth and because we addressed a possible issue. If somebody goes down, we have Sean Wade now. At this point, we have Averett that can play on the outside or Jimmy Smith that can match up with someone bigger. But if they don't get us, Ken, they're going to get somebody. And I'm looking at a team like the Steelers who lost something in their secondary. Where I kind of like the Bengals in that matchup, not to get too far off topic, but there's a team that you would say, well, the Steelers are probably better than the Bengals, mm-hmm. but the Bengals are going to match up really well against them because the Steelers may have trouble scoring and they're susceptible in the secondary. So, Chase and Burrow's college connection, I don't see anything that's going to stop them from clicking from day one. I think, he scored how many, 18, 20 touchdowns and before he mic dropped in the SEC a couple of years ago? It was something ridiculous. So having a number one, I think, will really help T. Higgins in his second year. And then Tyler Boyd's just a steady Eddie guy.
Yeah, it's certainly a very dangerous receiving core. And a lot of people will look at the Ravens secondary and their cornerbacks in particular and say they're the guys who really need to take away options for Burrow. But I actually think it's the rest of the guys who can be involved in the pass rush who also play a very significant point. It's Tyus Bowser getting to the right spot on the field and understand what's going on behind him in the passing game to impact a play. It's the fact that, the Ravens drop defensive linemen to cover, move them laterally or move their linebackers laterally because that's a good use of them, and take away passing lanes from Burrow that creates extra time for the pass rush to get home. One of the plays I just loved last year, and this goes back to a way that Maureen and I watch the game, and we don't watch it in real time when they're playing on the road, or in this case at home, I think because of COVID. Yeah, this was at home, and it was the first game, and I don't know if you remember it, but Patrick Queen had a great come from behind cleanup sack where Burrow took forever to get rid of the ball and ended up moving left. As soon as he stopped moving left, first of all, I'm continually pausing and going fast forward just a few frames to try and make sure we pick up all the uniform numbers on the field for our defensive score sheet.
Mercy.
And so then we had them all, and I'm like, I see Patrick Queen here and I see Burrow here, and there's no way he can get his feet set in time, even though there's like three steps between them. And I go, Queen's gonna get a sack and this might come out. And sure enough, boom, he got the sack and the ball came loose.
And there was nowhere to go with the ball either. He was staring down, I believe it was Humphrey on his left side. Humphrey playing on the right side. There's nowhere to go to give the ball. And man, Patrick Queen, what a blitzer. I mean,
great
the
closing
way
he, speed.
The way his closing speed and his change of direction. Like he could be going full speed straight ahead and make a sharp right as soon as the quarterback steps up. I mean, that's something that translated right away for Patrick Queen. But yeah, that was a fun play, and it was probably Queen's favorite play of the year too, because he got his former teammate on that, got the forced fumble. I think he recovered the fumble and got up, pounded his chest. Pretty sure it was him that forced it and got the sack, forced fumble, and the recovery, the hat mm-hmm. trick there.
Yeah, but Bowser got the forced fumble that Queen recovered and took to the house, I think. Maybe not. I may have that wrong anyway. But
yeah, and then we also had in that game, you're talking about, that was the No, that was the Browns game I was thinking of. Never mind. I apologize
for
that.
The Campbell play?
Yeah. But the Bengals do not have a threat at tight end, really, a true receiving threat. Mm-hmm. So that helps the Ravens because we've struggled against tight ends, and it's an area I'm kind of concerned about this year, how we're going to match up with your Kelseys and your Wallers and your Browns tight ends and that kind of thing. But Drew Sample has wasn't considered a receiving threat out of college. Hasn't done really much at the NFL level. And then C.J. Uzama a little bit, but he's not somebody that scares you. Like I feel like we could put Chuck Clark on him and be fine. Whereas we try that with Kelsey and Waller, that's where we start having issues.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, one of the things I was asking the Bengals guy about this, and this was Jake Liskow, was that is this a team that might do well playing 10 personnel against the Ravens? Because that's something that gave the Ravens trouble. And if you're willing to nickel and dime underneath with four receivers, if you play a lot of bunch formations like we saw from the Steelers, like we saw from Kansas City in that horrible week two, week three game, whichever it was, that's a nightmare for the Ravens. And as deep as the Ravens are in the middle of the season, they didn't have the ability to go four deep at corner. And in particular, they didn't have the ability to go two deep at slot. And so Terrell Bonds ended up on the field and he got picked on a little bit in the second half against the Steelers. It seems like the Bengals, if you got three great receivers and then you have a fourth guy you like, well, I'd give that a shot. You're not going to get anything extra in terms of pass protection, I don't believe, even out of Drew Sample.
Me too. And I tell you what, I think he, the Bengals guy, I think he undersold Mike Thomas a little bit. Mm-hmm. Very quick slot receiver. So to build on your point, they could have their three guys out there, their main three, and then either go with Auden Tate or Mike Thomas, who are complete opposite receivers. Auden Tate's a big, I think he's 6'6", possession receiver, end zone threat. They could really match up on us. Maybe we have either Averitt's out and they want to put the quick guy in, or maybe you know, Jimmy Smith's out and they want to put Auden Tate in, a bigger body, to make Averitt match up on him. I could definitely see that. I think the Bengals played a ton of 11 personnel. I mean, comparatively to the rest of the league, everybody plays a lot of 11, but I think the Bengals are, and Zach Taylor specifically is a ride and die with 11.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, Auden Tate, you mentioned, is a guy who went off against the Ravens. I don't remember if it was in 2019. And so the Bengals lost the game, but Auden Tate might have had 7-8 receptions in that game. For a bunch of yards, but he had one very big game against the Ravens.
And I think he had a little toe tap lean at the back of the end zone by the goalpost, middle of the end zone. He's got great body control. It's not just that he's 6'6". It's 6'6 with good body control. And that's got to be frustrating for Bengals fans that they sit there and they've really had – I mean, they get the best quarterback to come out, a lot of people said, in a handful of years in Joe Burrow, and they just patchwork the line. We've seen here in Baltimore that you can't just go with five okay linemen to start the season. Stuff is going to happen. You better have 7 or 8 guys that you can do the job. And they got Auden Tate on the bench. They have Mike Thomas, who is a my guy, on the bench. But they still have some question marks on the O-line. It's kind of unbalanced. They're not building, from the inside out.
Yeah, last point I'll just make on the offense there is that the Ravens have tried to go with lesser offensive line. They obviously lost Ronnie Stanley, which was very bad last year, in addition to having Yonder retire. But the Ravens are in a much better position to do it than the Bengals because Lamar Jackson makes all of the offensive line responsibilities a little less. Yet, when you have to come from behind, when you have to pass a lot, you really need to make sure you have a decent offensive line. We saw that in the playoffs again against Buffalo. We saw it even during the regular season some. Lamar can really feel some significant heat if he's in a position where he has to pass on all three downs.
And it doesn't take much. I just did a video on Lamar scrambles, and it's always one thing. You know what I mean? It's the one guy on the line blows it, or Lamar's first read is getting jammed, and next thing you know, it's a blown play and Lamar's scrambling. So, that goes back to the Bengals. It's going to be hard for their personnel to hold up against Brandon Williams, Derek Wolfe, Campbell, McPhee on the inside. Whatever kind of pressure we're going to bring, I'm confident the Ravens can find a mismatch, and I really like the way the Ravens match up with the Bengals. Talent level aside, if you say they're equal talent, where their talent is, it matches, our talent matches up well with theirs.
Right. I think let's flip over the defensive side of the ball now. So a lot of ways for the Ravens to attack the Bengals, but start with one of yours.
I think the run game is the most obvious. I mean, I'm looking at the statistics, and you know, they had a big turnover. They lost Geno Atkins. Help me out with the names. Dunlap left. Lawson, the guy I really liked. And it's pretty much a whole new front. DJ Reader, I believe, sat out last year. They signed him last year. Mm-hmm. And then the one guy who always seems to play great against us, and every time I look at his grades or the message boards in Cleveland where he came from, they were ragging on him, as Ogunjobi.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, Ogunjobi has like every big game against the Ravens, including week one of last year when that Browns team lost 38-6. But the Browns really dominated both sides of the line of scrimmage, offensively and defensively. They did dominate. And I've never seen that in an NFL game before that I can recall. A team getting beat by 32 when they win both line matchups. It just doesn't happen.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that the Bengals are going to have a real hard time holding up to this new Ravens offensive configuration because they don't have much depth. And they drafted Osai, I think, what was he, the third round? It was kind of a steal. Mm-hmm. But he's a converted inside linebacker. He's still got a lot to learn if they're going to play him on the edge. And then, of course, they got Trey Hendrickson. Sam Hubbard is a really good player. Now, I like him. But other than that, you go across that Bengals front, they replaced a lot of people. And I really don't know if it's an upgrade. I mean, I know Atkins was getting old, and but Dunlap was still a heck of a player. He kind of fell out of favor there. And Lawson gave Orlando Brown a lot of problems compared to other edge rushers that Orlando faced.
They have two good young guys coming in on the defensive line who are – you know, we're highly thought of college prospects. Cameron Sample out of Tulane is a guy I watched some film on, because it was Patrick Jones or Johnson, I always get that wrong, was on the other side with him. They were number 5 and 7. I was kind of getting the treat of watching them both a little bit, particularly in that game against Tulsa. But he's a pretty good player. Tyler Shelvin is a mountain of a man, and I think the comparisons, if you want to pick a player of that type, you know, they're going to want to pick Brandon Williams, and we're going to say it's really more like Mount Cody. Probably ends up being somewhere in between, but I think he's got more characteristics of Mount Cody than he does of Brandon Williams.
Well, I think Tyler Shelvin's looks like Tarzan, but I'm not sure how he plays. I mean, I don't want to say insult the man, but he's built for the NFL, but I just didn't see it in his play. Cam Sample, almost the opposite. He's not your prototypical 6'4", 6'5", big hawking lineman, but he's got some style in his game and some toughness. So I do like Cam Sample. Again, they're younger players. You know, younger players coming, and we're talking about how they're going to hold up against the Ravens' rushing attack. It's going to be a big challenge for them, and then they really don't have a sack guy. They don't have a go-to sack guy.
Well, let's start with that. It's really a team effort to hold up against the Ravens' rushing, and a lot of things went wrong in that Week 17 game. Jermaine Pratt ran his mouth. The Ravens decided to run it right down their throat, and Pratt made a lot of the mistakes that made that really look bad. But that led to the 404-yard game. In addition to, everybody on that defense had given up in the second half.
I was going to say, I'm sorry, that was my big takeaway. I remember during the draft show we had, I believe his name's James. If James is listening, hello, James. But he asked me about Colon Castillo, and, you know, he graded out well, played well, and I was trying to say, I hate the question of professionals' effort, but that was the last week of the season. They were getting crushed, and I just didn't see it. I just didn't see any effort on the Bengals' side that last game. But even in the first game, if you go back to when the Ravens won 27-3, we had 24 rushes, 161 yards, which is 6.7. So even when there was something to play for earlier in the season, we had our way with that defensive line and linebackers.
Yeah. And it's they really did beef up there. So I think part of what I want to say about this being a group effort is that a team like this in particular, that's maybe a little bit below the line in terms of the average level player they have on the line, they really need to have a deep rotation of players. The worst thing you can have is what happened to the Ravens at midseason last year, where not only are they thin at the position, but they also, the guy you've got in there isn't really up to snuff and can't play a lot of snaps. So you end up with a guy guy like Ellis, who is not a bad NFL player, you know, he's fine if he takes 15 to 25 snaps a game as your backup nose tackle, even maybe a little bit less than that. But in that range is fine. When you ask him to play 57 snaps, you're guaranteeing failure, basically. It's not a guy who's going to hold up for that. And this is something elsewhere in the division. All three of those teams, all play a much heavier workload on their top guys than the Ravens do, are much more rotational about what they play. And even with somebody like Calais Campbell last year, before he got hurt, they were playing him a hell of a lot less than he had played in his previous 5 years, where he played between 77 and 80% of snaps.
And the Bengals stick out. You used to mention the rest of the division, but the Bengals stick out. I mean, it seemed like they had the same four guys up there forever, and they never came out of the game. And I don't think they did their team a very good service by that. You know, with the Ravens, we're lucky. It seems like every couple of years we'll draft someone, at least in the mid rounds, work them into the rotation, keep people fresh. The Bengals really wore out Adkins, especially, I thought. You know, here's a guy whose sack total just dropped right off the cliff, but he was playing, I believe, I apologize for not having it, but I think he was up in the 70, 80% of the snaps.
Consistently.
Look it up while I'm talking, because I tell you, I think Adkins was really heavy on the snaps there. And then Dunlap and Lawson as well.
Yeah, so from 2015 to 19, he was hurt in 2020 and only played 8 games and 11% of snaps. But from 2015 to 19, he played 73, 72, 66, 70, and 76. And I can just tell you, the number of times that a Ravens defensive lineman has played 70% of the snaps, I counted them up once recently, and it's a remarkably low total. Greg did it once. Nada might have done it twice. But the Ravens really haven't had anybody since they moved to the 3-4 otherwise who's been at that kind of percentage.
I wouldn't be surprised if they subbed Reader in and out and used Tyler Shelvin or Mike Daniels that they also have on the bench, a big run stuffer there from former Green Bay Packer, because Reader opted out last year. He's a very big man, so I could see them maybe substituting a little bit more. But, I mean, they have the same defensive coordinator. So who knows what they're going to do. But if they're facing a team like the Ravens or a team like the Browns in the division, they're really going to have to keep those big guys fresh up there.
Yeah, it seems to make sense. A lot of teams play a 4-3.
If you have loved ones that rely on your income, you need life insurance. But finding the best quote shouldn't take a lifetime. With Policy Genius, you could save 50% or more by comparing quotes from America's top insurers. First, head to policygenius.com. In minutes, Policy Genius will compare prices starting at as little as $1 a day. You might even be eligible to fast-track your coverage with a no-exam policy. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the paperwork and red tape. If you have any questions, their team of licensed, independent experts is on hand to help. In fact, Policy Genius's award-winning service has a 5-star rating across thousands of reviews on Trustpilot and Google. Make today the day you cross life insurance off your list and get protection for your loved ones. You could save 50% or more by comparing quotes. To get covered, head to policygenius.com today.
Don't rotate as much, but you know, if they're going to 3-4, that probably means they realize the need for more full-time down linemen, big bodies, and will get what they need in terms of rotation. It just seems the Ravens have been so good for so long, and they've always been a rotational team. I don't see why everybody is not trying to mirror them that plays a 3-4. You know, in terms of having a rotational group that you like. But everybody, it's a game of contrasting styles. And you know, Bill James once wrote that every game of chess, he was quoting some friend of his, was like an argument over how the game should be played. And that's kind of what the NFL is. There's a lot of contrasting styles. It makes for a great game, by the way, when you have people who think we should run the ball all the time and beat the crap out of our opponents, or we should pass the ball all the time because, hey, it's a passing league. And you have more advantages relative to the rules to do that. It's great when you have that. The baseball had that in the 1970s in terms of contrasting styles of play, and they've lost that. Now everybody is home run, walk, strikeout. I think the game's a lot more dull.
Great. You had your Royals and your Cardinals with Ozzie Smith on the carpet laying it it down, mm-hmm. playing the speed game. And yeah, you know, of course, you had your Earl Weavers and some different style of those old Milwaukee Brewers with Rob Deere and, man, Robin Yount and all those home run guys. But yeah, like, you know, I always say that this is a game of matchups in any way. I mean, you may have guys who struggle with quickness. You may have guys who struggle with power. So it doesn't really matter sometimes who's technically a better player or your starter. If you're going against a player that struggles with power, put your stronger guys in there. Let them play a little bit heavier rotation to snaps. So I think the Bengals would serve themselves well by doing that. But the Ravens and Wink, they're masters of it.
Okay, so let's, rather than comparing the Ravens defense to the Bengals defense, let's talk about how the Ravens offense, given how they're constituted, needs to attack that defensive line and some of the potential depth issues, some of the potential issues with non-rotation. Do you think basically that running a scheme with a lot of pulling guards, a lot of power read is a system that makes sense to continue with against the Bengals as the base way to maintain possession and win the snap count?
I sure would. I mean, I don't see too much of a difference. If anything, I think we should attack the edges of this team, run right at Hubbard. Since he's their best player, you know, double team him, maybe have your pullers maybe come towards the right side if you want to check that end. Test out Trey Hendrickson. He doesn't have a reputation to run defense. They're going to put Osai out there, run right at Osai. So I kind of feel like we're going to attack the edges more overall this year. But this would be the team where I would go off tackle with J.K. Dobbins a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. Dobbins had 13 for 160 against them in that last game.
Yeah, that was obviously that was a big part, including the big 72-yard run where he kind of stiff-armed Pratt on the play and left him to his comments over the winter. that was a wonderful play for all elements of that. Here's my question on Hubbard. Okay, now there is obviously some great linemen in the league. T.J. Watt in the division, certainly Miles Garrett in the division, where I think it makes a lot of sense for the Ravens just to ignore blocking them on run plays a lot of the time and let Jackson beat them. Hubbard is a guy I think actually, despite lacking some of the quickness to deal with a player like Jackson, has made better judgments in the game in terms of just guessing sometimes when that's appropriate. Because if you don't guess, Jackson will make you be wrong. So you may as well guess. And a lot of times. And I thought that, you know, this year, one of the things I'm projecting is that Jackson is going to be back in terms of his groin and his ability to have some of the quickness that we saw in 2019 for the power read to run outside. So last year, of course, most of his runs came to the inside, where most of the running backs were mostly headed to the outside. If we're back to that, we're back to right tackle leaves the defensive end unblocked, or that outside linebacker unblocked, you end up with a really easy game for your right tackle, which, by the way, the Ravens might really want that with their current personnel.
Sure, sure.
So what do you think about that? Does that seem like a reasonable way? More power read, more outside opportunities for Jackson, and does it make sense against a player like Hubbard?
It does, and I'm sure that we'll see some of that. But actually, I really feel like we're going to see a little bit of a difference in our running game overall, just playing it more straight up and not depending on the read option as much because of guys like Ben Cleveland, and not just because Cleveland's a good player, but because we have a stronger player at center now. Mm-hmm. You have Bradley Bozeman that can handle some bodies up there. You have Zeitler that can handle some bodies. So when you're talking about the interior of our O-line, I think we can push people around a little bit better than we have in the past. But for this Bengals matchup, they have some big beefy guys in the middle, and that's why I said this might be the game where we attack the edges. I remember, to get to your point about not blocking the end, I mean, I remember when we were playing Kaepernick in the Super Bowl, Suggs just decided he was going after Kaepernick every single play,
yep.
Trying to hit him, at least just hug him, scare him, you know,
right.
Put a hand on him every time and just let the Haloti Ngata and the guys do their thing on the inside before Haloti got hurt, which really changed that game.
Quarterback is not protected under that situation. So if you go after the quarterback and you tackle him after a handoff and there's a fake involved or potentially even involved, involved, you can tackle him. He's not protected like he is as a passer. So you should certainly take every opportunity you can under those circumstances. I love the Ravens' chances against the Bengals this year to run the football effectively, and I think we just are going to get a sweet taste finally of what really top pass blocking looks like with having Cleveland and Zeitler on the inside. Cleveland, as good a run blocker as he potentially is, and I think he can be coached up at the NFL level, really is a great college pass blocker, and a lot of what he does technically I just love as a pass blocker. So I think we'll see that, I hope, from week one this year. Zeitler, obviously a terrific pass blocker as well, has enough length to open the gate at right guard. So I think he can do both things the Ravens really need him to do. I also think Cleveland will have no problem pulling at the NFL level, but I'm very excited to see what this offensive line, particularly guard, does this year.
So, Ken, what do you think about my philosophy and my best guess that we're going to see less read option, less pistol, maybe more shotgun under center, and just run a more conventional run game? That's just my overall feel, and I haven't.
You said more under center. You're predicting
maybe more under center, but just basically less read option. We don't have to go with the inverted option when the regular read option fails. We can just run inside power gaps, schemes, that kind of thing, and just kind of keep it simple and have Lamar run a little less. I think he's going to run a little bit less this year on design runs.
I mean, first of all, that could certainly be true. Lamar running less makes a lot of sense in the long term in terms of keeping your franchise quarterback all set. The Ravens have not yet committed to him, but it certainly is something that makes long-term sense. I think the Ravens offense and the Roman offense in general does best when there are multiple points of threat and decision for the defense. Mm-hmm. So basically, they have to make a choice, and they run the risk of being wrong on each one of those. And the reason why that's so effective is when they're wrong, it's usually in level two or level three, and it can be the kind of mistake that turns a 8-yard play into a 50-yard play instead of turning a 2-yard play into a 6-yard play. Just the stakes are much higher. So it's, we saw Van Der Esch and him getting out of position.
Right.
One of the big runs that Michael Crawford looked at when he was on the show with Josh Pasieka was looking at that Philadelphia Eagles run where Lamar got free for a touchdown. And basically, a lot of things went right for the Ravens on the play. They made a couple good blocks, certainly. But, Orlando Brown moved up to level two, didn't even have anybody to beat on, who was scraping, right, because they all ran themselves out of position. And Skura actually missed his block, but they got Andrews to basically be doubled up on the outside for no good reason. And it's when they do things like that, and the other team will run them out of position, run themselves out of position, if you threaten them in multiple ways. And I love the way that offense works. And a lot of the criticism of Roman, I'm tired of hearing. I'm not going to try and educate the messages on this. I'm not, other than talking about it here. But it's not something I'm going to say something to every Twitter complaint about it, because it's just not who I am. But I don't really believe it. I think that Roman is perfect for the talent on this offense in terms of creating a scheme that will be optimal.
That's going to be something I'm looking for this year, Ken, because I for some reason have this sneaking suspicion that the offense is just going to look different, like to a casual fan, the average Ravens fan. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, hey, wait a minute, why isn't Lamar dashing to the outside all the time anymore? Well, my answer is because we have better talent on the interior of our offensive line. But I like your point. I wanted to add one more to it. When you're talking about the stress and the big playability, it also creates a second of indecision when you have all these moving parts. You have two pulling guards this way, but you have a running back going that way. And then is Lamar going to keep it himself? And if he does, where is he going to go? I mean, really, all you need is a split second in this game to have the advantage. So that's I think, is the beauty of Roman's scheme. So I had never really thought about what you said about the big play, because I tell you what, I would not want to play safety with Dobbins and Lamar coming full
or
speed.
Or middle linebacker. I mean, you're going to be under a microscope in terms of your play if you're an inside linebacker for that team.
Right. I mean, think about Kevin Byard, a really good tackler. And this was on a scramble, not a design run in the playoffs, but it was a total whiff job. I mean, Lamar changes. Well, I can't even say it was a bad angle, because Lamar just changes the darn angles all the time, man. It's you think you have it, and there it goes. It's like a ball hit right at you that next thing you know, it's going over your head. Like, what happened? I had it.
All right. All kinds of fun. So do we have anything else we want to talk about in offense? Let's talk about the passing game a little bit. And, you know, with, against the Bengals, this is certainly an issue. The Bengals' strengths at safety. That's absolutely where they are the strongest. They have Jesse Bates is one of the best safeties in the game at free safety. And by the way, I've mentioned this on other shows. I don't really want to say it every time, but I can't resist this time. When any other team tells you they have a versatile safety group and every player can be an A or a B or a C in terms of we can bring him up, we can play at a dime, he can play in the box, he can play back, whatever. What they really are telling you is they don't have a single free safety. That's what they're telling you.
That's fluff. That's fluff. Yeah. I mean, we're guilty of it too. Neither one of our safeties are true free safety.
Right.
It's nice to have flexibility, but the free safety, the true free safety is a dying breed. And, you know, if I'm Eric DaCosta, I'm looking at Jesse Bates. I don't know what his contract situation is. Maybe you asked your Bengals guy. I'm sure they're trying to exercise some kind of contract extension with him. But, man, he would look good on this defense. I like him. Von Bell. Von Bell is good at what he does. He's your thumper. He can play in the box. So it's going to be interesting to see how we throw the ball or attack them, because I can tell you one thing, I'm not going to miss William Jackson III. Thank goodness he's gone.
Yeah, I'm happy with that too. Even though, you know, Boykin had some pretty good success run blocking against him, I agree. That's a guy I'm happy to see gone. Getting back to free safety for a moment, the Ravens have really shown a willingness both to go after a free safety high, but also to trade for. To acquire one in free agency. I mean, both Weddle and Thomas were guys they paid big money for. To come here, and they got good value out of Weddle. They got 3 of the 4 years of his contract done before they released him, which is what you would hope in a normal deal. You probably are not going to end up paying that fourth year salary. You're going to release the guy. With Thomas, they didn't get good value, obviously. I think we'd agree on that. But I think there's a good realization within the organization that if you don't trade for that guy, you probably have to draft him in the first round. And where the Ravens draft, you might not get him. So, you know, it's a very hard position. Free safety, left tackle, and quarterback are 3 first-round positions. I'm not completely bought into the nature that Ravens need to spend a first-round pick on a wide receiver every time, but I'm very much brought into the notion that if you're drafting one of those 3 positions, it better be in the first round.
Safety is a position close to my heart. It's where my playing experience comes. And I can tell you, it's a quarterback of the defense, whether they're calling the plays or whether they're not, because you have to have somebody that, number one, doesn't mess it up. But see, one of my issues of why I'm lower on Stone than other guys, I know that Stone is a guy that you like, is because he's too safe. Like, he's always in the right position. He takes that extra. He's not a great athlete, but you can say, hey, Stone graded well there. He was in the right spot. Stone graded well there. He was in the right spot. But he's not coming up and smacking people like Elliott, and he's not going necessarily sideline to sideline and getting his hands on a lot of passes. That is, it's becoming a unicorn, man. It's something to come out for. If there's a great free safety coming out of the draft, it's somebody that I want to target. And it even makes me wonder about a guy like Malik Hooker, who I think is still out there, if he could be had for a good price, and see if you can take a chance and keep him healthy, revive his career.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting choice for the Ravens because they've got 6 safeties already right now.
Right.
You know, if they'd be committed to ditching Stone, they'd probably be committed to ditching at least one of Richards and Levine, which I think is going to happen anyway. And then they just picked up Brandon Stevens, who I think the fact that they used a 3rd-round pick on the guy, and the fact that I don't think anybody really had him on their board. He probably easily could have had him in the 5th round, easily could have had him with their last pick, in my opinion. Maybe they thought somebody else was sniffing around, but they've got to think he's a free safety of the future, or you don't. There's no way in hell you put that kind of draft capital into him.
Well, he's got the athleticism for it. And, you know, I always err on the side of, hey, we don't know. You know what I mean? I mean, they err on the phone. Their scouts are talking to our scouts. And if they had an inkling that somebody wanted them. But, I mean, I had Tylan Wallace way ahead of – I didn't even have Stevens on my board. So, you know, it was a shocking pick. But once I digested it, I mean, secondary was a good place for us to address. But as it relates to the Bengals secondary, I mean, to stray off topic, Andrews was our go-to guy. Andrews and Hollywood were basically the only ones who produced. And I think that was a function of the Bengals not having a 3rd safety or a 3rd or 4th cornerback that they really liked. They have Mike Hilton in the slot now, which is going to help them. But I can see Andrews again eating versus this team.
Are the Ravens positioned better now with, say, Sammy Watkins either in the slot or at the X? And perhaps it'll mean number five goes to the slot and we see Bateman at one of the two outside positions. Are they better off trying to take advantage of the Bengals' corners? Obviously, William Jackson's gone. We start with that. That's a good thing. And Mike Hilton, while he was good, I mean, a lot of what makes him good is kind of some of the things that made Webb good. And it's not necessarily what he does in terms of coverage directly from the slot. It's more, you know, he's a good tackler. He's great at rushing the passer from the slot. You know, with Pittsburgh, a lot of rotational coverages that they did confuse the Ravens. And I thought he, you know, he's an effective part of that. But in terms of just his pure coverage ability, Hilton's good. He's not great.
Well, we'll talk about the other teams, but I think overall in this division, it's going to be the cornerback two or the right cornerback specifically in this division, which is where you're going to have to go. You're going to have to go after because you have your Denzel Wards in this division, your number one corners, your Haydens. But if you're looking at the Bengals and you're looking to attack them, this is where Bateman's going to come into play. This is where Watkins is going to come into play. Or even a guy outside the box idea, a guy like Tylan Wallace.
Yes.
If you want to line him up on the right side and let Hollywood move around and find a mismatch somewhere else, you can do that too. So I think the Ravens were very wise to upgrade their outside receivers. And Costa said, of course, he wanted statistics and analytics on the outside receivers because sometimes that's your best matchup. And I don't want to see us have to resort to dumping it off to Ricard to start the second half because we really don't have any other option to go to. So big indicator early in the season. And we have our division games. Like I said, the first division game is against these Bengals in week 7. So we're going to have some time to figure ourselves out before we get into the most important games.
Very heavily backloaded schedule for the Ravens in those terms. The Bengals, if folks read my article, have the easiest win schedule in the division. And when I say that, all the where and all the who is decided before the season ever begins. It's decided based on last year's records. So there wasn't any question about that. It's only the when. And the Bengals don't have any unfavorable Monday night games of their own. They play people coming off Monday night. They don't play anybody coming off a bye. They don't play a game in London. All the nice things on their schedule. Their schedule worked out to a plus 17, while the Ravens are minus 7. The Steelers are minus 8 and the Browns are plus 12 within the division. So the Browns and Bengals really got an easy break relative to the Ravens and Steelers this year.
Right. And the other thing is they play the same home and away games as us as far as common opponents. So they're going to have the Rams coming to them like we have the Rams coming to us. They're going to have the Chargers have to go to the Raiders will probably be their biggest trip of the year. So you're talking about a lot of 1 o'clock games and teams love their routine. Also, when you're talking about the when of the schedule, it's something that I look at is how rested the team is going to be. When Cincinnati comes to town, we're in the middle. It's the third game of a 4-game home stretch with a bye in there. So we're going to have our third straight home game. Cincinnati's going to be playing their second straight game on the road. So there's an advantage there rest-wise and travel-wise to the Ravens in week 7. And then later on in the season, the tables turn. We go to Cincinnati, will be our third road game out of 4 games, while Cincy's having their fourth home game in 5 weeks. So it's a lot of stuff to think about, but just to break it down, when they come to town, we're going to be pretty well rested. They're going to be road worn and vice versa when we go to Cincinnati later.
Well, let's hope that holds up. And this is an important part of this matchup episode is that, you know, we're projecting this in early June.
Mercy.
For a week 7 matchup. That's early November, I guess, or just about there. So we realize that some things will change between now and then in terms of the injuries and in terms of who stars for some of these teams among their young players. I mean, Rashad Bateman may be a great player at that point. Talon Wallace may have had a big breakout and become an important player for the Ravens. You know, Ben Cleveland could be hurt. I mean, you know, things could be very different than they are right now. So anyway, we'll hope you take this with a grain of salt, but it's also just, you know, talking about some of the kind of inherent strengths and weaknesses of these teams as they're constituted right now, how they match up. It's an interesting topic to have while you're waiting for training camp to begin.
Well, Ken, I know we're running late, but I tell you that your point right there makes me think of depth. And when it comes to depth, advantage Ravens. I mean, we're gonna be cutting some pretty darn good players. Where the Bengals' depth, you're talking about on their defense, Khalid Kareem, Wyatt Hubert, Tyler Shelvin, Cam Sample. They have a bunch of unproven guys, you know. So if it's a war of attrition, you know, obviously we want to see all the players stay healthy. The Bengals, especially up front, can't play any games, man. They've got to keep their players healthy and fresh.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the Ravens' depth is near the top of the league. One of the things to look at with the Ravens is they only took 9 UDFAs this year. Mm-hmm. And that's a low total for the Ravens. And that's among their starting 90. It may be 0 make the team. The larger practice squad this year. Another thing, by the way, we haven't talked about this a little bit. I do want to have a separate pod on this topic. But the rules, I am told, are likely to be adopted. I saw this, I wasn't told it directly, but I saw on Twitter one of the NFL talking heads had mentioned that it's likely, might have been Pelissero, that the players and owners are going to agree on the 3-week IR to continue and the 16-player practice squad. So that's a big thing. We'll have practice squad elevations. We'll have, you know, 3 weeks to return players. I mean, teams that have really good depth are going to be that much more deep throughout the season. The Ravens used to have some games they could play to do that, but this is going to make it codified in the regular rules.
Well, those two rules just make so much sense because you want to see good football. Mm-hmm. Well, and guys don't want to get up and move from city to city and go back and forth between two teams. I mean, you know players are going to get hurt. Why not, if you really want a good product on the field, have a nice – what did you say, 16? It's 16 guys on the practice squad?
I think it might be 14. I might be wrong, but it's a big number.
Right, a big number. Why not just have them, like a bunch of guys who at least know the system, so when somebody goes down, you don't have to fly them in, give them a COVID test probably, who knows what's going on with that, learn the system, they're not ready to play, and then you have bad football. I mean, I think everybody wants to see good football.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Oh, this has been a lot of fun. It always is to have you on, Jason. Tell folks where they can find your work.
Sure. It's Huddle It Up Films. The Huddle It Up comes from my JV quarterback who used to say Huddle It Up instead of Huddle Up. So I decided to go with Huddle It Up Films. And also there's a Huddle Up podcast there's a ton of Huddle Ups out there. So Huddle It Up Films on both YouTube and Twitter. I'm looking to get my YouTube up a little bit. I'd like to get to 1,000 subscribers so I could do more with my video, have some celebrities like Ken on there and all that kind of good stuff.
You can have me on anyway, buddy.
But I appreciate the support. I love my football family out there and have a lot of fun on Twitter. I'll interact with you and I love hearing everybody's opinion. You know, you said something earlier about how you watch the games, and me and you could be standing at a function and we can hear some screaming and yelling over there and we can watch an altercation and people get into it. And I could say, Ken, man, did you see that one person? What, you know, why was he doing that? And you could say, nah, man, it was the other person's fault. And
well, we need to slow down the video and actually go back frame by frame.
We have to go frame by frame. But yeah, my point is two people can watch the exact same thing and we can all have different, we can all help each other. So there's no such thing as a poor opinion. I love hearing from everybody. So please, you know, feel free to comment on my videos or on my tweets, and I'll interact with you. I love it.
Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter. Folks, if you're out there, this is the time of year. I really love to hear from people who are passionate about football and want to talk about whatever. You know, if you want to talk about why the Ravens use more or less of the fullback, that's a great thing I'd love to talk to you about. Why you like a particular player to be a dark horse on this team. Love to talk to you about that. Have you on for 15, 20 minutes. Narrow focus topic. We kind of go through it quickly and we go a little bit back and forth. That's the kind of material that we love to produce on a daily basis here because people want their full fill of Ravens football 365 days a year. And I'd like to fill as many of those as we can.
We're getting close, Ken. I don't know about you, but it feels like the worm has turned. I feel like it's 5 o'clock in the morning and we're just waiting for 1 o'clock.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It is exciting. Well, Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Especially At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.